Can you hear me? Sounds like I'm right. Oh, there we go. Okay, good. It's great. These are great mics. We're going to do something special for this sit. I want to put it in perspective. And maybe I'm putting it in perspective for the people that don't do the whole heart lovey thing very well. For those of you that already have that kind of quality about you, you can disregard this. But for the people that have a little edge about it, yeah, I can't do the metta. That's who I'm talking to. Just for a few minutes. Then we'll all talk. So when I came into this practice, you know, like many of you probably, I came in because I was having a lot of suffering, a lot of difficulty. So the whole point was Buddha's statement, I teach suffering and the end of suffering. So I heard that end of suffering and I thought, oh yes, that's the practice I want to do. And so my energy was all about ending suffering. And I thought that meant you got to get on the breath and stay on it. Don't be moving. So being the good lawyer I was striving to get on the breath and stay there, stay there, stay there, stay there. And needless to say, I increased my suffering dramatically. And every once in a while, you know, I would hear a teacher drop in metta. But, you know, it sounded like kumbaya stuff. Nope. I'm here one purpose. Ending suffering. Get on the breath. Stay on it. And it took me a long time. And I'm trying to save you, some of you new practitioners, from the long, unnecessary pain of running away from metta just to come back to it. Because metta actually is a necessary part to practice, to awakening. Without it, we are just spinning in a circle. So think of it like this. Here, coming to this retreat, we all want this unfolding of a peaceful mind, of tranquility, and a sense of liberation of the mind. What does that feel like? And for many of you so far, you're not even close to that. Like, I can't even envision. I thought I could get it before I came here. Now that I'm here, I realize, yeah, no, it's not going to happen to me. But that is not true. So in practice, the retreat container is just one part of setting the conditions for awakening the mind. The retreat container, meaning the seclusion, even if you're doing it online, the seclusion, the precepts, kind of like the vows we took this morning to kind of renounce the judging, comparing, fixing, let that go, and this taking refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, all of that together is one condition. We set that up, and that's one condition. And then there's the practice, sitting, walking, yogi job, sitting, walking, yogi job, sitting, walking, yogi job. That's another part that we do. And there's the instructions and the Dhamma talk, which is the wisdom, and we're practicing that wisdom, and we're practicing the instructions to try to see, you know, where this, how this shows up for me. And many yogis leave off the metta because that seems too soft, I'm not about that. And when you leave off the metta, you are kind of like walking around with a broken limb. You're trying your best to fly without two wings. And the Dhamma needs two wings to fly. It needs the wing of wisdom, which is the instructions and the Dhamma talks, and it needs the wing of compassion. It needs the wing of love to give it some uplift. And so I'm hoping I can talk about metta in a way that you just love. Because ultimately, anyone that's ever had any long practice, what you notice more than anything else when you come out of it is that you love everything. You love. I don't care. I love. I have a practice when I get very, very upset or anxious or angry is I just imagine the immense amount of ants underneath my apartment building, and I call them all forth. Come forth, get your metta, then next, get your metta, next. Keep giving metta to all these ants until I can calm down. This is the nature of it. And I tried to calm down through my thinking mind, but the thinking mind gets stuck in trying to fix and solve the problem. That's how I'm going to calm down. If I fix this, then I can calm down. And metta comes at our difficulties from a completely different doorway. Metta comes from, if I soften in this moment, I can see more clearly the skillful means. I can see an appropriate response. It doesn't just soften the hard, brittle side of us. But it also opens me. It opens the part that gets very constricted and very vulnerable and tight. And it opens that on purpose. That's what it's doing. It's opening, it's softening us, and it's creating a level of refuge that we can trust our capacity to be with some of these difficult things that arise when we start getting still. So if we don't cultivate the metta quality, then what we come face to face with is all the things that the ego says, we shouldn't have that. I shouldn't have done that. I wish I hadn't done that. That whole purification process becomes a process of a lot of unnecessary added pain. Because instead, if we soften, then we can see the wisdom of, oh, at that time, I thought this was the right thing to do. At this time, I can see it's a little unskillful, but we're not hating ourselves because we see that. It softens our ability to see more clearly. So it stands for, it's the Pali word for loving kindness. And loving kindness, sort of like universal, it's more universal goodwill. But one thing I learned, which helped me begin to open to this idea of metta, was this teacher that said, I think it was Sharon one day, Sharon Salzberg, I think she said, she came to Seattle, and I think she said that for metta to be real, you have to find your own word. You got to find your own, the word that helps you soften. You find your own practice. Find your own connection to it. So the calling in the ants is what I do to remind me I'm too agitated and I need to calm down first. And then I can move forward. So metta as a quality, it's a heart quality out of the Brahmaviharas. And there's four of them. It's Brahmaviharas. Metta, it's actually the names of the rooms we all sleep in. So metta is this quality of loving kindness. And if you take that loving kindness and you point it towards suffering, you get karuna, There's compassion. It doesn't come from me. I'm not being compassionate. But I have the capacity to be compassionate when I take my own friendliness or loving kindness and turn it towards some suffering. If you turn that same suffering towards another person's good fortune, then you get a quality of mudita, which is a sympathetic joy. You get joy because someone else has joy. Not that you are happy yourself, but you're borrowing their joy because you can feel as a human being another person's joy. And then if you turn that quality of just the wisdom of Dhamma and the nature of the world we live in, then you can have equanimity, which is upekkha. You have a balanced way of relating to life. It's not indifference, like I don't care. It's just that I can see that I've been trying my best to help my son get his stuff together, and that is not working. And so now I can have a balanced way of letting him do his own thing. In fact, he actually taught me equanimity because I kept trying to get him to go to college, my youngest boy. I try to get him to go to college, and I'm like threatening, I'm bargaining, I'm bribing, whatever I can do, crying, pleading, because I'm thinking, I'm going to have to take care of this boy if he doesn't get to college and get a good job. So I'm doing everything I can to try to help encourage him to believe that his life is going to be better if he goes to college. And he's a musician. All he wants to do is play. So he's like, I'll do dishwashing and so as long as I can play. But I'm like, not a dishwasher. That's not what you can do. You got to go to college and get a degree. So one day he sits me down and he says, Mama, do you know that picture of me when I had the blue shirt on? I think I was in like the second grade. I'm like, yes, that's it. I know that picture. That's my baby. I know it. He goes, I am not that kid. I'm like, yes, you are. He goes, no, I am not that kid. So I can go to college if that will make you happy, but it won't make me happy. So you want me happy or you want you happy? Because we can only have one or the other. Otherwise, we're going to fight every day. That's what equanimity is. It's not, he wasn't yelling at me, mean. He was just stating the truth of it, is I cannot live his life. And so in equanimity, we learn how to hold that kind of capacity. We learn how to hold the truth that we can only do so much and we can't control the world. But that quality of equanimity comes from friendliness. He was not approaching me like anger. It was actually quite a soft and easy land for me. He kind of let his mama down easy. And there was a lot of friendliness there. And I could understand what he was saying. And I tried to sneak in. Is there a way we could? No. But that learning to bring this friendliness in is how we bring in metta. So I want to throw out some words. I want you to close your eyes. I'm going to throw out some words. I want you to think about the word that resonates with you. There's the word friendliness, you know? There's soften. Kindness. There's loving kindness. There's easy, supportive, goodwill. You see these words? These words are words that might mean something to you. And ultimately, I found that the word kindness is the word that meant something to me. loving kindness didn't work, but kindness, I could do that. Softening, I could do that. That's what we're doing. We're softening the rigidity. We're opening is another word. These are words for metta. Metta, so over the course of this sit, you can think about which word resonates with you. I'm going to talk a little bit more, and then we're going to do a little bit of practice. But metta is a concentration practice, actually. We are concentrating on the quality of the heart, of opening and softening. It is not necessarily... It took me a while to get this, but it is not necessarily an energy you feel when you start the practice. But it ripens. It is a quality that unfolds. So when I am angry and I start calling ants, the first couple of ants, I kind of feel for them because they don't really get the kind of love that 14th ant gets. That ant is really getting it. But the first few, they probably are looking at like, dude, you go. No, you go. But what you're doing is you are ripening into this quality. That's why it's so I didn't understand. You know, for a long time, I thought, no, you got to have the feeling straight away. And I didn't quite understand because we don't always have that feeling. And it's actually kind of good if we don't start out with it because you can feel the ripening quality of it. It is an antidote to aversion, probably one of the best antidotes to aversion I know. There's two ways to practice with it, and the antidote part of aversion and the antidote part of metta to aversion is the softening quality of metta. So as it softens, that's all you're trying to do is soften. Don't worry about solving the reason why you're averse, because your capacity to come up with a skillful means comes after you have softened. But oftentimes we try to fix the problem that we're so averse with as we are averse. And we're actually making it worse and worse and worse. So you soften first, and then you can see with insight and wisdom what is the most appropriate thing you can do, whatever that is. The practice itself, in order for it to ripen, needs to be cultivated. And when it's cultivated, it grows. And it grows, and it grows, and it grows. I'm not as bad as I used to be, but at some point, I opened some doorway to mudita. Oh, I remember those days. I was in love with everything. And it was so large, but it wasn't me. It was just so expansive that sometimes it would be difficult. Matthew probably remembers it was difficult to be around me because I was so up here. And everybody else was sort of down here. But I've kind of settled a little bit more now, and I'm not quite so big, but I am still very big with love. And it's very shocking because I never could access metta for a long, long time. So we're going to do a little bit of a practice here. Let me just make sure. Yeah, we can do a practice here. And then we'll take some questions to kind of see where you're at with it. And I want to encourage us to begin to, I'm going to give you my phrases. Every teacher kind of gives you their phrases. If they do one way to do metta is phrases, like we're going to do now. And then another way would be to radiate, just feel it. Some teachers do it like that. I kind of do a mixture of both of those. But my phrases today, you may say them, or if you have your own phrases, you say those. But over after the sit, maybe during the walking, see what phrases actually resonate with you. Keep them very simple, very tight, or you'll have to think through, what did you say? And I don't know if I like that, and maybe I shouldn't say that. And this doesn't apply to them, and the mind will get caught up in thinking. So very simple, short little phrases. And I use the loving kindness chant phrases, and so we'll say those. The best way to start metta is to be very relaxed. It's kind of awkward because to me, you really want to be relaxed when you're doing the wisdom practice too. So, but it's said that metta is done in a kind of inclined, relaxed position so that you feel easy. So another way to think about it is if you're in a chair, you could kind of put your legs out, that kind of felt sense of not being too tight in your practice. So let's do a little bit and then we'll take some questions. I like to start metta by thinking about somebody that you really, really like. I mean really, really, really like. I think about my granddaughter all the time, but just think about somebody you really, really like. And just the thought of them will make you smile. For you have a sense that that person you really care about and the words that you're going to say in your phrasing, you mean it to that person. My phrases are, I'm saying to my granddaughter, I got her face in front of me, my granddaughter. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. She has a little card that has three beings on it that says Tigger for happy, Pooh for calm, Eeyore for sad, and Rabbit for angry. So as soon as I said happy, I was pointing to Tigger. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. It doesn't take a lot. You're just sitting here, relaxed, saying the phrases to this other being. Not trying to make anything big, just saying these phrases. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. So take a few minutes and just say your own words to this being, this easy being, being that you can't help but love them. It could even be a pet. And sometimes if I'm having a really difficult time, I'll use an inanimate object, just something that draws my heart into it. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. Stay here, knowing you're sitting, feeling the body, saying phrases to this other being. We say the phrases over and over and over. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. One last time here, may you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. And then see if you can bring to mind someone that's like a mentor, teacher. It could be an archetype of being, of just a great being, like, His Holiness, 14th Dalai Lama. It doesn't even have to be Buddhist. Could be Christ. Could be Moses, Muhammad. Doesn't matter. Could be some political figure that you have a lot of respect for. Just a being that you have a lot of respect for. Or a mentor, it could be someone like a fifth grade teacher that really did something to support you. Someone that you have a lot of respect for yourself. And you send them the same phrases. You're feeling the first person that you really, really care about, so you're just sending the same energy. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. I always imagine being smiling at me. So I feel like they're getting it. But you don't have to. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. So you take a little time for yourself. Just stay here and say the phrases. Not trying to make anything happen. Just trying to have an energetic kind of wish for the happiness of another. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. One last time here. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. And I always send metta to myself before I ever stop in any metta practice. I had to learn how to send metta to me. And so I always do it just to cultivate it. So we're going to end this little practice by saying some metta to ourselves. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. Might be a little difficult, but see if you can say the phrases. It's a wish for yourself. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. So I'll give you some time to say some phrases to yourself. Did you find it? Okay, great. So we're going to take some questions.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.